This summer, we really want to look at Jesus, look at our faith, and look very much at our times. One of the reasons, as Larry and I talked last September, was that when you face a new decade, when you begin to talk about the 80s, when you, as historians do, characterize the 70s and the 60s, any passage of time is a time to take stock of where we are and what time it is and what is appropriate for this time in our life. So that's the theme for this summer. Facing the 80s, colon, faith to go out with good courage. You realize tonight on that green sheet of paper that we prayed a collect that has this phrase in it. Most of your rooms, unless the last one in the room stole it, has that prayer on a silk screen on the wall. It has for a long time been called the Holden Prayer. So it combines a lot of things this year. It combines that we are at the beginning of a decade, that there is a kind of shakiness, that there is a kind of what's going to happen, that there is a loss of some confidence in our being able to solve problems, and there's a perhaps a renewed interest, not only in those who've not been in the church, but those of us who have always been in the church, to look at again at our faith, to look at our roots, to look at where we find our courage. What I'd like to do tonight, having given only that much introduction, is to have you, first of all, state what it says to you when you hear the theme, faith to go out with good courage. Can we begin that way as to what images that raises, what expectations that has in your mind for what we're going to do this summer?
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is the whole military arms buildup and the fact that more and more people are talking about going to war for a variety of reasons. And when Ralph Dellums or somebody said, if we're going to have registration for the draft, let's be sure we do it at the gas station so everybody knows why we're doing it. I think that that our faith has to that whole issue. So for me, I'd like this summer to have some discussion.
Well, I guess, John, in a way for me, it seems like it goes back maybe to your discussion yesterday on alternative lifestyles and the ability to leave here and not forget that some of the things that you're doing here as far as passive energy use and wastefulness and our general consumption and consumeristic society and maybe changing it to a more simplistic type of lifestyle that makes better use of both the natural resources that God has given us.
Okay. Two things Al said. First of all, there was some content of alternative lifestyles that maybe we need the courage to try something new. The first thing he said was go out from here. I think that's one of the first things that people have told me that they thought that it meant, that it was stressing the fact, and it's been said at Holden many ways. One of the ways is Holden is a good place to come to only if it's a good place to leave, that it is a place apart only so that there's a perspective for you to go out. So faith to go out with good courage, at least when we say that at Holden, is the assumption that you didn't come to make your final home in the mountains, but that you're going back to wherever is home, somehow with more courage than when you came. Thank you, Al. Bill Dietz, for instance, who will be on the faculty and wrote the book Christianity in Real Life, a man who has helped start Laos, a very strong emphasis of laity within the church in the LCA, told Larry he was delighted with the theme. Obviously, it was a theme that stresses the laity of the church. They're the ones who go out. So the first thing he read was, we're not going to be clergy dominated because that theme is a theme for laymen. Well, I think maybe Bill Deal finds that theme in most themes. That's all right. It certainly is a theme for lay people who go out every week. Want to add to what your impressions are when you hear that?
Well, I think for people of my generation, that you're looking for some kind of courage to go out, because we've lived through depression and two world wars, and none of us are very eager to look forward to another or end these hard times that we've lived through. And I think, personally, thinking about all the things that are going on in the world is frightening. And I would like some assurance of courage from somewhere that would help my generation makes that case.
Okay. Yes.
I would like to underline that, not just from your generation, but maybe from our generation, the middle-aged parents of children who are soon to be adults, and it's a reaffirmation of being here, reaffirming what we're trying to do in our home life, in our personal life, but then adding the dimension of going up with courage, not just plain courage, but good courage. Something to ponder.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I suppose for myself, when we talk about faith to go out with good courage, there's a sense there that I think people are looking for reassurance that God is active in our world today. Mm-hmm. That we're talking about a God who's not just out there, but who cares enough. You know, when we talk about Mount St. Helens, when we talk about the reality of the arms race, the whole sense of hopelessness and helplessness in the face of a government that, let's say, is not responsive to people, then people are looking for some type of assurance of that. And I think there needs, you know, that type of faith is needs to be addressed, and we have to be able to provide for the care of people at that point in their lives. I think that's a basic thrust for a lot of people in their lives.
Thank you. Yes.
And I think that points to what we can explore. It's the points of intersection, connection, and motivation or dynamic between our faith in living Jesus Christ and the social political system on a global scale, economic systems such as multinational corporations on the large scale to the small scale of how is the community where we live, whether it's a suburb, a city, or a small town, organized and related as people together. What does our faith in Christ say about our specific historical context, economically, socially, politically?
Okay.
I think it can also speak just on a very personal level, just for personal growth and personal awareness and courage in developing in that way that I think Holden can help develop and foster.
In that sense, it might sound contradictory, but you know, in a way, I think maybe people come to Poland not with the idea that it's a retreat center, maybe, but that they're coming from the real world. It's coming from the Midwest, driving through the ash, took courage to go out from where you are to here. But maybe I mean, a lot of people come with very high expectations to a center like this or any other kind of retreat away from it, and it takes courage for them to assess in their minds what their expectations are and whether those are realistic from the standpoint of their spirituality, their growth, their relationship to God, their relationship to their family and other things, and whether their frustrations are real ones that can be transformed in any tiny way by this experience.
Thank you. On the point of Holden as retreat center, or the real world, or coming to a place apart, Thomas Merton, who did live a contemplative life in a remote abbey in Kentucky, always claimed that it was much easier to hide in the busyness and the noise and the activity of the world than it was in the solitude or in aloneness with God. He thought that you had a better chance of hiding at the Wenatchee Mall than you did at Holden Village or alone in the woods. So don't think that we haven't assumed that part of Holden's role is to let you face the issues of the day with good courage, because we're also studying our faith. So that's not an accident of this theme. Yes.
We can face it and look at the concerns, but we need information and feedback on how to respond, what to do, and just not think about the issues, but to directly work on them and respond to them as individuals, groups, as churches, as communities, and decide what can be done, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and just not leave it a vague feeling like, hey, we did address the issue, how wonderful. But let's respond and get things rolling.
No one here responded the way some, I think they were black youth, they were inner city, on hearing that theme, assumed we meant go out with good courage, that it's going to end, the world is going to end, and we ought to do it with good courage. No one has assumed that that's what we meant by the theme. That it's just about to blow up, so let's have good courage. And I don't know if you were supposed to think that, I'm just telling you that was one group's reaction to the theme. Any others?
Well, we're...
Yes, go ahead, Ed.
We're pretty much a Caucasian group here tonight, and I think that one of the big problems we face in the 80s, continue to face, is the problem of the inner city, the black, the Cuban, the large number of refugees. And most of us have, I hark back to what the young man said a few moments ago, most of us have so little cultural understanding of the problems of the refugees and of the problems of the inner city that I think this is one thing we're going to have to equip ourselves with in order to even function as Christians.
It's very easy to forget that at Holden. I used to live where Larry now lives, in the middle of Washington, D.C. And I'm now aware when I go back how black that is. It used to be a shock to come out west and to travel for miles and miles. Our kids, when they were little, used to say, "Where are the black people?" They would just keep looking out the windows when we would get farther and farther west. The feeling, I just came from Baltimore, two weeks in Baltimore. The feeling is that Miami is not an accident, and that those cities this summer on the East Coast that are largely black are really rumbling. So it's that kind of day. I don't think we can ignore that at all.
David Masonberg made a good point in the session the other day along these lines, and that is that we North American Christians have had a great deal to do with other peoples by way of U.S. relationship to those countries. But we really know very little about the peoples themselves. At the time of the Vietnam War, we were so deeply engaged in Southeast Asia, there were 12 academics in this country who had specialized in Vietnam issues and relations. 12. And as David said the other day, now American investments in South Africa exceed all of our, anything we had invested in Southeast Asia and Iran put together. We know very little about black South African. So I just want to expand on what you said. It's inner city, it's refugees, but it's the peoples of the world who know and we do about them. And facing the 80s is facing a smaller world, so I think that understanding other members of the body of Christ is one of the tasks.
Someone spoke at the same time Ada did. Who else was about to speak? Go ahead.
I was just going to observe on your comment about the inner city kids who said go out with good courage, that maybe for a lot of us it would be easier to go out at that juncture than it is to go out with good courage and live in the world as it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Has that sparked any other response to what you think of when you think of the theme?
When I heard the theme, I thought of some questions. Faith to go out with good courage, I thought of, well, what kind of faith? And I guess your introduction, talking about theology of the cross, indigenous theology of the cross for our day, is what I would see as sort of a task of faith for us. Mm-hmm. To re-understand our faith in the context of the cross, in the light of the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in an abstract theological way, but in our lives, which would involve what some people have talked about, you know, changing our lifestyles and that kind of thing, which Holden is really, I think, good at helping people to become aware of that in a lot of ways, and just living more in harmony with the earth. And then I think of going out, and a lot of people, I asked myself when I heard that, well, go out to where? And a lot of people have spoken to that too, and those were some of the things I thought of, the inner city, the slums, the poor regions in this country and in the whole world, in the third world, and to our own churches too, which may be suburban and in wealthier areas, just because probably most of us are middle class people, than a lot of places in the world, and re-educating, going out to help re-educate people wherever we are, mm-hmm. but then supporting the going out of others to help in places where the need is great. Mm-hmm. And then with good courage, made me think of, well, what kind of courage and what do we need courage for? And that just, what do we need courage for, I guess made me think of, well, this really is, I think we all sort of have a feeling, at least I do, of the 80s as being an age in which, or a decade in which, Christians are going to need, in this country, are going to need more courage than they have needed in the past, just as Christians in other countries have needed courage at times in this century. I think of Bonhoeffer, and then I think of Solzhenitsyn, and you know, Russian Christians, and South African Black Christians, and Rhodesian Christians, and I think that we're going to be facing some of that too, where it takes guts to stand up and say, I'm a Christian, and this is what that means, and this is what that stands for, and this is how it changes my life, and decisions affecting military and all that too, so that's what I thought.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to follow through because I said very poorly what I said at the beginning, but to me, faith to go out with good courage is to step out of our complacency and our American civil religion, and if you take it, just go back to the arms race again, to stand up and say, this is insane. I'm not going to send my sons to fight for a war that's for oil or whatever. The nuclear arms race is insanity. And that's going to take a lot of guts and courage because it's not very popular. And it's, I think, as Christians, if we stand up and really say what we should be saying, we will be persecuted and laughed at and scorned, and we won't fill our churches and we won't be very popular. But I think that's what we need courage for, is because our stance is going to be unpopular if we take up the cross, and because it will mean suffering.
Yes, Renee.
When I've heard people talk about going out as going into the inner city or talking third world, I think an important part of that faith is also going to have to be being willing to be ministered to. A real understanding that part of our faith has to be accepting new ideas, that as we teach, we're going to have just as much to learn. As we minister to these people, we're going to have just as much need to be ministered to by them.
Thank you. But that was going to be a program called The Mission on Six Continents, The Internationalization of Mission. And we really couldn't tolerate it in the Lutheran churches of the United States. We really squashed it. The assumption of that was we had lots to learn from the emerging nations, third, fourth, fifth world nations. And I am told at a meeting where it was squashed, Lutheran leaders said, no native is going to come and tell me how to run a church. So it's that's a hard lesson for us to learn, that part of the faith to go out may be that we are not the saviors, that internationalization of mission means that some people help us understand what the faith is. That may be part of the courage that it takes. Thank you. One of the things, I think Steve's comment, one of the things that might be helpful from the fact that this collect is not so self-assured, look at it again carefully the next time we pray it, not knowing where we go and all of that, I'm not sure that's always been true. We've been praying that over the years. I'm not sure we really didn't think we did know where we were going. So maybe I ought to test the assumption. I had an assumption that things were a little shakier in the United States, that we weren't quite so sure of ourselves, that we weren't quite so confident that we could problem solve. Let's test that. Maybe that's not a consensus here at all. And I kind of assumed that at the beginning. Is that the way you feel, or is that the way that you sense the mood, or is that just... Spiro Agnew had a word for that some time ago. Did you know that? I mean, I felt he was talking about me. Nattering nabobs of negativism. Anybody that talked in some kind of a pessimistic way, Spiro Agnew's speechwriter gave him a phrase, and I remember, I thought, well, he must be talking about me. So, yes?
I seem to somehow have a sense of people's sense of insecurity and fear and frustration that seems to be a growing sort of thing in recent years amongst associates at work and amongst our younger generation and again amongst our previous complacent older generation that are now getting to the point of frustration and insecurity that they didn't have before. And I wonder somehow if we don't, if it doesn't tie together a little bit with our growing lack of faith and lack of Christianity association with a number of people.
You do sense more insecurity in a number of age groups.
I've sensed it amongst my acquaintances and people at work and state government, which I come from, and also amongst the generation, the younger generation that's here. It seems like in our own children of this same generation that seems to be more prevalent. And I guess maybe that kind of tends to frustrate me just a little.
Okay. Does it frustrate you that other people feel that way, or do you also feel that way?
I wonder. I feel that way a little bit myself, more so than what I did.
You see, I'm almost trying to be my own devil's advocate. Are we simply adding to the problem by sounding this pessimistic when we start? That's what I'm asking. I'm letting you get at me if you want to, or get at us. Yes, Tom.
I think one of the things that I note is our total lack of national goals. In fact, our national goal has sort of become survival and preservation of what we have. We don't look down the road. We've gone now, I guess, about 35 years without a war. And in the past, we've kind of depended upon wars to pull the nation together and give them a sense of purpose. Now, I hope that we can arrive at some kind of a goal or a sense of purpose without having to think about fighting a war. But we don't. As a country, we don't have any national goal, I don't think. We don't look to the future. In fact, sometimes I think we've even lost our sense of historical perspective, and we're just living in the present. And that's why some of the problems that I don't think are sort of blown out of perspective because we're so caught up with the present.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There was an essay in Time magazine, I guess it's a year ago now, a very moving essay in which the essayist just agonized over what he called the sense of spoiled purposelessness in American life. Spoiled was a reference to kind of indulgence in material and sensual delights, but no real national cause or unity.
By the way, the whether or not you agree with all that Douglas John Hall says, he does feel that we have the failure of the dream that was the American purpose. Theologically, he looks at that. Well, whether you agree with his conclusion or not, I think the basic premise is what you've just said, that American dream has kind of cracked.
I was just going to say, President Carter tried to rally the country around the moral equivalent of war, if war provided some sort of unity, and in the April 77, I guess.
And
around the energy issue. Yeah. I mean, that was a call for sacrifice and dedication and so on, and it didn't work. It hasn't worked yet, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at this very historical perspective. I've heard it said that we've lost our faith in the future and our confidence in the future through the mistakes of the Vietnam War and Watergate. And I can also think of Europe, which kind of had the same metamorphosis after the First World War when there's such a great carnage in Europe. And I think that basically we have seen that there is maybe something wrong with the dream, and people have become more pessimistic. People don't care to vote anymore. People don't seem to get very interested in much of anything except their own lives this day. In fact, I guess the 70s was called the me first decade type of thing. And in a way, I think that pessimism grows on pessimism. But I think that this is the chance to take a look, since we are starting a new decade, to stop, take a look, see where we're going, and maybe make a change.
Okay. One of the interviews that I read this past year, which gave me hope or increased the faith to go out with good courage, was an interview with Father Daniel Berrigan. And the interviewer was in essence asking him how he keeps going. At the end of the interview, he said, "How can you stay so optimistic?" And Father Berrigan said, "It has nothing to do with optimism. I have never been able to be optimistic, and I'm not optimistic now. Christian hope is not optimism." And he gave a very clear answer. If you want to talk about how do things look, you are not optimistic. If you have expectation based on promise, you can, in fact, be filled with hope. It was a stirring answer as to how he keeps on keeping on. And I think the very kind of language of this prayer says that even at times when it's not easy to be optimistic, we are a people filled with hope. And that's just not naive hiding from the issues. It has a different way of seeing, and it hangs in there when some other people have kind of lost the reason for optimism. Let me do only one thing and then open it up a little bit more on why we chose that particular prayer beyond the fact that it was the Holden prayer. I think there are more and more people who are understanding that the times are shakier than they used to be, that we do face some things that mean we're not as optimistic as before. Let me just summarize a couple of those things. The Club of Rome reports, 1972, Limits to Growth, 1974, Mankind at the Turning Point. Let me just in the briefest way summarize those things. The people who got together at Rome, invited by Aurelio Pace, an Italian industrialist and futurist, tried to assess how we were doing as a human race. They were trying to do what somebody said, we do need some input on how things really are. I forget where that was said, and I think we do. If you put together the widening gap between the rich and the poor in the world, and it gets wider every year, if you put alongside that food production, which which by and large has gone down since 1972. I mean, even with the Green Revolution, there is a limit to the amount of food. With rising population, and if you weren't aware of it, until at least several years ago in the United States, we got to zero population growth, but worldwide, that's almost a, what they call exponential growth. Took from the beginning of time to 1830 till we had 1 billion people alive on the world. Took 100 years to have the next billion. Can you picture the line graph? Took 30 years to have the third billion and 15 to have the fourth billion. Well, you put that in with the limited food supply, then you add the amount of pollution and environmental damage that's caused by our new technological society. You put all that together, and those people who gathered there said we have an unprecedented situation. Now that's a strong word, because there are others who say the times of our greatest achievements in the past have been when we faced a crisis. That's brought out the best in us. Don't say it's unprecedented, it's simply new to us. Other times have faced these kind of crises. The reason the Club of Rome people used such a strong word was in times past, by and large, if you found the cause and eliminated the cause, you moved ahead. The cause was a bad king. Get the scoundrel out and get a decent ruler and let's move ahead. Or the cause is the rats carry the plague. Determine the cause, eliminate it, you move ahead. The unprecedented part is we now have a problematique. Let's see, they've even had to come up with a new word. A milieu of problems. And when you go to solve one, you aggravate another one. That's the reason it's a little shakier than it used to be. It's not just a matter of problem solving, it's a cluster of problems that are unprecedented in regard to how we bring our expertise, our skills, and our mind to bear. I gave a talk in Seattle on Club of Rome. What I just gave you in 2.5 minutes, I took 45 minutes doing. And at the end of it, a hand went up and the voice said very authoritatively, "Obviously, you are a clergyman." And I paused and he went on. I don't know why he started that way, but it did intimidate me a little bit. He said, "I am not a clergyman, I'm a scientist. I want you to know, and I want this group of know, I too have read the Club of Rome reports, both 1 and 2, and I think we can solve the problems that they lay out there if we bring science and technology to bear." You could tell that the people in the room thought it was going to be a short evening. He said, "Unfortunately, all of our solutions create a problem. We are creating a problem by solving the problems we had created." Are you still with him? He was a strange guy, but he had a strange way of talking. Then he announced, "We're going to burn up," and he sat down. And there was no more stress on me. Everybody was right to him. The heat was off of me. They said, "Just a minute, you can't say that and sit down. What do you mean?" So we got a 3-minute lecture on thermodynamics. His whole point was the Club of Rome did not look at our most critical problem. So he gave this little speech. Being here creates heat. The more people, the more heat. But we never had the factor before as scientists of the amount of heat we're creating with this technological society. And he thought that what they overlooked was any, you know, the greenhouse theory of an inversion where you go beyond a turning back point, change the atmosphere and all of that. So the people who thought it was going to be a short evening, the only image I had was the biblical image of the man in Amos who started down the path one morning and met a bear. So he decided he wouldn't take that path. He went down another path. He met a lion. So he concluded, "This isn't my day." He came home, leaned against the wall in his house, and a snake bit him. You had the feeling that no matter which one of these you started down, you had a problematique, which meant that we really are at the point of the end of easy optimism. Whether or not you agree with Douglas John Hall, he says that's especially hard for us because we've had an officially optimistic society. So it's especially hard for us to contemplate, theologically or any other way, the possibility that the dream was a failure and find our hope in the midst of that. He says that's the task for the church. Whether he's right or not, and if he's right, whether or not we're able to take that task, part of the summer theme has that as its basis. Now that either confuses you or ends your discussion of what you were going to say or preempts it, or it stirs you a little bit more. We'll take about 5 more minutes, and then I'm going to call it a day at 10 o'clock, and those who want to stay can stay a little longer, but the rest can be excused. Tom?
Yeah, well, I agree with you in the main, but I've got to blow the whistle on
all right.
One thing, and
good.
That is this saying that it's the technological society that's getting us in trouble.
All right.
Even one statement about pollution. Is due to a technological society. I would say that it's quite the opposite, it's due to our level of consumption with too little technology. And I'd be happy to develop this in depth sometime, but I think
that'll
that,
be fun.
I think that you can quickly show that without the technology we enjoy, the level of consumption that that is current in the world would lead to much worse pollution, misuse of our resources, and that I'll state that as a premise, that most of our environmental problems are too much consumption with too low a degree of technology.
All right. I'll have to be convinced of that, but I'll be glad to be part of that discussion. That sounds fun.
I'm going to go a completely different route.
All right.
What about our politics in conjunction with the church? How do we mix them, and where do we start? It's got to start.
How do you think we mix them?
I don't know, but we've got to start with one area first. If we go in all directions, we're never going to get to another discussion this afternoon. Dealt so much with materialism. But the man next door who has a boat and all the 3 cars in his garage and all these other things, and the fellow on the other side of him is out of a job and starving, he's not helping him. You hardly even know your neighbors anymore. So somebody's got to start somewhere. I can't do it because I'm too old. But there must be other
what do you mean? What do you mean by politics?
I mean our leaders in politics. We've got to start somewhere along the line to get somebody in politics other than the ones we've been having for some time. And I think it all begins with people who vote for a name other than somebody who you think is going to get in there and do something and limit their terms. That's getting way out, but I mean, I think that would solve some of our problems.
I'll accept your statements, and I'll scold you for saying you're too old.
I'm not that ambitious anymore.
We started out talking about going out to the inner city or going out to foreign lands, going out to other people, and really I think there's a sense in which everything we've said since then, always about the technology or the politicians or these kinds of things, the people who are really involved as the scientists or the politicians or the technocrats, those are by and large white middle class. And maybe there's a sense in which we, in order to be faithful to some of the urgency I heard Mary saying, really need to focus our going out on the communities in which we live, whether we think we're old people or wherever we are, that increasingly I think the kinds of really courageous witnesses that are going to be needed are going to be right within our own communities of power.
Thank you.
Well, what we're saying, it starts with us, regardless of our age. If it don't start with us, it's not going to go anywhere.
For sure.
Okay.
Don't make any difference how small a fish you are in the pond, you still got to begin with you.
Most forums like this usually have some people who feel that what we really need are the first steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's come out tonight. Others think that it isn't our problem that we don't, that we couldn't find steps 1, 2, 3, 4. We don't have the will to do that. I guess we've had some mixture of things here tonight, but is the primary problem a problem that we don't see it clearly, or is the primary problem that seeing it we have not been given those first steps to take, or seeing them and having been given them we don't have the courage to take them?
Or is it that we don't have faith enough, that the lack of faith causes the lack of courage?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We look for intellectual certainty instead of...
Intellectual certainty instead?
Yeah, I said we look for intellectual certainty instead of, you know, what I hear you calling for there, that faith. I think we too often confuse the two.
And instead of...
Just a second. Go ahead.
I think somehow we all sit back and we wait for our politicians to do things that we all should be pretty aware of, that they're not God to begin with. And one individual in politics is merely another human being like you and I. And he certainly doesn't have the power, regardless of whether he's Senator Jackson or President Carter or anyone else, to form all of our policies and to do all the good things that we expect that are going to be the salvation of the world. It's got to come from us, the people. Our religious community, as well as our intellectual community, of other areas of science and technology, which have been referred to. It's everyone. Some people, I think, don't face up to their responsibilities of their knowledge and education, and they're just plain don't have this incentive or something to face up to what needs to be done. Do some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mary?
Well, I always feel so impotent because the problem seems so large that I just kind of give up before I get started. Because somehow I think that it's up to me to change history. And as we've reminded ourselves at Holiness Winter especially, that we're called to be faithful to what we understand right where we are, and that there is a God of history who works out things. It's arrogant on our part to think that we have to take all of these problems on our shoulders and somehow work them out. If we're faithful to what we're called to do and to be, and to begin with where we are and take a first step and speak out and say something, I think that's what God expects us to do. And then we don't feel so absolutely helpless to do anything, because we know, I think that's what faith and trust is, and people have said it better this evening than I'm saying.
Let me thank you for the evening. It's been a long day and we didn't get started right on time. I was asked, after Mary and I did a retreat on world hunger, global justice, and our lifestyle, was asked after 2 days by a woman who enjoyed us and liked us, and I liked her. She said, I have one question. With your intense interest in those issues, how in the world did you take a call to Holden Village and be 52 miles from anything up in the mountain? So I wanted to answer her, and it gave me a chance to think through again why I'm here. The first reason I gave her was Holden Village is built on the premise that the people of the church, the lay people of the church, are able to, are capable of, and want to do good theology. And while you're here, this theme invites you to be in a continuing discussion theologically of the issues that face the world today and what our faith means in the midst of those. That's what Holden's all about. That's why I'm here. If you, as a result of tonight, continue some discussions with other people, that's the That's what a forum is for. The forum is like in the Old Testament where you build the altar here so that the fire strikes over there. The forum was to start something here so that the real conversation is over coffee tomorrow. That's fine. If it gives you an idea of a session that you want while you're here yet to follow up with the theme, Larry will at least try to do that. We have to make some planning at the beginning of the week, and we can't bump everything we plan. In other words, I'm saying the nice thing about Holden is that this is not the end of a discussion. It's simply the end of this aspect of a continuing conversation theologically on the issues that face us. The bookstore has lots of good stuff. There are other tapes on this particular theme. Last year, Charlie Mays was here doing Theology of Cross, Theology of Glory. He has some on Douglas John Hall's book. I have some in there on that book and on Theology of Cross, Glory. Anglican bishop wrote a little book, Enough is Enough, that has lots to do with first steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, but it also has some good chapters on the theological reasons for going out, meaning primarily going where we live, not to be saviors of the world. We got lots of possibilities of continuing this discussion.